Welcome to Sent 315. We're here to encourage and equip Christians to engage in the adventure of sharing Jesus with those that God puts into their life. And we're so glad you're here.
Woo! It's a good jingle.
Yeah,
it is.
That's like the Sarah Main jingle. I think she found that,
didn't she?
Yeah.
She actually made it. Like, she found it, but then she cut it apart and made it into what it is.
Sarah, you are a genius. Yeah. You email Kevin Miller at foothillschurch.org and say, could I have Sarah Main work for me? Because she's a genius.
Hey, she is. Or, anybody that gets her to work for them, they're lucky.
Yeah, just turn on her social media.
She's a babe, too. Did you know that?
I don't.
She has matured into a beautiful woman. She really has. And she's smart and she loves Jesus.
Has her own business.
Yeah, she does. And she is just cranking it out. She's that good. So thank you for appreciating.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know when the jingle ended what I was going to say. So thank you. And this is funny, Brianna. I got to tell you and Matt. Okay, so the two people who really ask me before they come on the show, what are you going to ask me? What are we going to talk about? And so, like, Mark Hoffman, number one, closely followed by Linda Hoffman, because they prepare and they're so smart. So for Mark Hoffman, when he came on the show the very first time, I said, okay, page 218 in this book you wrote, this sermon that you gave from 2005, these are the portions. I was ready for the questions and gave him that all. They are eclipsed.
Yeah.
By Bruce Pitts.
What?
Bruce Pitts and I went to lunch and he's like thinking. Like, I got friends that think a lot.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, because one time Sylvia said, Ken, I wish I was more like you, because I think later what I would have said. And I said, darling, I start talking long before I start thinking. And that can really get you in trouble.
Can confirm.
So don't be jealous of that. Sometimes that gets you in hot water.
That's
but Bruce
right.
Pitts has come to us completely and totally prepared. Completely.
And we already have so much in common with our cars.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
We love Jesus, our cars. Yeah. It's like we're
Forerunner Club.
Meant to be.
That's right. I wish we would have been recording with that first 15 minutes of my truck is better than your truck kind of thing. Was really
pretty
cool.
No, our trucks are better than your car. Yes.
You guys are all in the same family.
And then there's Matt Hall's car.
Is Matt Hall's car the race car out there?
Oh, yeah. It is. Wow. It's beautiful. You like that gray paint, John?
I do. Yeah. And the rims.
And you know, his seats cost more than my car.
Well,
I'm pretty sure.
No, they don't.
Okay, you know what? I want to talk about Jesus and sharing Jesus. And what I really want to talk about, do you remember Kenneth McCrory, who was on our show?
Yeah.
So Kenneth, I was thinking as I was praying about this. Me too.
He's amazing.
Praying about this conversation. And I thought back to Kenneth McCrory. And you guys can look him up. I don't know what episode number is. Matt will put it in the show notes.
I will put it in there.
And what Kenneth said is this. He goes, when I was a pimp, and he called it a whoremonger, and I was a drug dealer, people didn't know me. They just know what they saw. And now, when I go to church with my beautiful family and I'm in my suit and tie, they don't know me. They don't know my past. But they back then, when he was doing very bad things, they didn't know that he was made in the image of God, and that what God had in plan for him and capturing his heart and getting him radically saved for Jesus.
Yeah.
And I think that about you, Bruce. Everybody just sees you and you got it all together and you got the greatest smile and you are contagious and you change lives and you don't even know it. You might have a whisper of it, but it's so funny because he's like humble dude. But people don't know you.
That's true.
And they didn't know you a while back either, did they? So that's what I want to dig into. I want to talk about your whole story.
Okay.
Okay. So was there a time before you knew Jesus?
Not that I can remember. My earliest memories are at Indian Hills Camp. Their family, the founders are family.
Your family help start Indian Hills?
Yeah, my great aunt, so like my dad's
aunt.
Wow.
They started the camp.
Yeah. Are you related to Courtney Schaefer?
I am. Yeah,
so cool.
It's not a small world. It is a big family.
Yeah. So that was, it's interesting because you have that side of the family in there, just like the Schaefers. So.
Yeah.
And then you have like my dad's side, who are unlike the Schaefers. I remember hearing about Jesus early on in life, and it's not how I came to know Jesus, it's how I'm coming to know Jesus. Because it's like an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
Because he's infinite.
It's
an ongoing thing of getting to know him. And my story isn't linear. My story is I know the Lord and I run away and he goes and gets me and I'm definitely the one. as we all are. Yeah, man. So I heard about Jesus as a kid, and I just knew that it was true. I've always had a reverence for the Bible. As a kid, I would be the only one hopping on the bus that came to our apartment complex on Sunday morning and go to church and not know anybody, but it just felt like right. And I didn't do it all the time, but when I woke up early enough to catch the bus, I did, and it went, and it just felt like there's an author who wrote a book called Blue Like Jazz. His name is Donald Miller.
And I know that book.
But he talks about how penguins go to the, they all congregate in this one place. They all just know how to get there. And that's like their true north. And that's where they go to find their mate. And I'm like, that's how Christianity was to me as a kid. And I understood it as much as a child can. But then growing up in the world and being influenced by the world, like we read it in John Mark Comer's book, Practicing the Way, we are formed. And being formed by the world, I never read a Bible. I didn't go to church. But if you asked me if I was a Christian, I would have said yes, even though I was not living that way. But as a young adult, I was really struggling. I was smoking pot for a long time and grew up with this identity of hearing about my dad and what kind of person he was and me wanting to be nothing like him. And my mom, you know, really very spiritual person, really seeking for the truth. And I always believed that if God existed and he was good, that he would show us who he was. He wouldn't leave us guessing. And so my spiritual journey was more like this, like eclectic universalism at one point. It was like all roads go to heaven because I couldn't figure out which one was right. And I was probably 20, 21 years old. My daughter was just born. I was really stressing. I don't know why I was stressing out so bad. I'm young enough to have really high emotions, 2021.
Oh, yeah.
Really stressing out about this topic. And my daughter was born she had to stay the night in the hospital. The next day I was taking a taxi down. And really, I don't know why this was so heavy on my mind at that time. What is true? You know, what God is real? Like, I was really having a hard time with it. And I get in a cab and I sit in the front seat and the guy can tell that I'm perplexed. And we just start talking on the way to the hospital. And he said his name was Kohan or something like that. And I said, they're all pretty much the same. And he goes, oh, no, they're not. There's definitely one truth. And he talked about like his side of this, what he believed. And as I was getting out of the car, he put his hand on my leg and time stood still. And I saw nothing except in my mind the words, you are the Lord. And I paused and I stuttered and I said, you're the Lord. And he said, what's that? You felt something? And I got out of the car and I don't think I've told that story in a really long time. But to me, I'm like, looking back on that story, was that an angel? Was that Jesus? I don't know. But I saw the words, you're the Lord. So what I felt Jesus was telling me in that is that there is only one way when it's him.
Guy a Christian?
Yeah.
Wow. Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And a couple years passed and I'm back to being a pothead and that experience came and went. And I was working for this company and my car broke down and I needed a ride home. One of my buddies gave me a ride home and he had a notebook on the seat of his car and I picked it up and I started reading it and it was one of the Psalms. Uh-huh. And I just started weeping, just weeping. And a short time later, maybe another year or two passed and was back to doing the same old thing and had my still broken down car. And I had gone to this Mustang shop. I owned a Falcon, 64 Falcon Futura. It's basically a Mustang with a different shell. So I go down to this Mustang shop. My car broke. This guy, Sean, I thought he was a pothead like me. He had long hair. He's a mechanic. I'm like, hey, bro, let's hang out. He's like, yeah, come down. And he's working on my car. One day my brakes broke. I didn't have the money to fix it. So he worked on my car for 4 hours and he pulled parts off his dad's car that he was restoring, like just a super nice guy. And I was like, hey man, what do you want for repayment? He's come to church with me on Wednesday.
Wow.
And
bro.
I'm like, okay. And I meant it. Like I really meant I'll be there. But I was a pothead, so I was also a flake. The Wednesday came and went, I didn't go. I woke up Thursday morning and my car didn't start. And so I'm like, man, so I'm trying all morning and doing all the tricks. It's an old car. There's only a couple things it could be. And so I call him and he comes up. And he hops in the car, and he turns the key, and guess what happened, right?
Starts up. Of course it does. That's the way it works.
Car starts right up, and I'm like, okay.
You know. Didn't try putting the key in and turning the key?
No.
You never got that?
I have no try everything else.
Now it's making sense.
I have a feeling the Holy Spirit was involved there.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm not a dummy. I may have been a little bit of a flake, but I was not a dummy. So I was able to see, okay, something's happening here. And so that Sunday I went to church. Back then it was La Mesa First Assembly and on La Mesa Boulevard. And I went to church and this guy told a story about a man down in a hole. And I don't remember the story. All I remember is the end is that Jesus got, the guy told a story about a guy down in a hole. Everybody went by and told him why he deserved to be in the hole. And then Jesus came by and got in the hole with him and took him out of the hole. And so that broke me at that sermon. And I felt like God was talking to me, and I rushed forward and like just weeping and gave my life to the Lord. And within a very short time frame, like I quit smoking pot and I just stopped cussing, and my work ethic was great, and God started blessing my finances, and like all this was going very well. And so I think that was when I really met Jesus, was during that time of my life. I was probably about 25, 26.
Okay.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Like, yeah, really met him.
One of the things that I hear in it, like when you're saying you have these encounters, supernatural and otherwise, and it just instantly breaks your heart. It instantly captures your attention because he knows your heart. You're his. You're just fighting it, and he's going after you persistently.
Pursuing
after
you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful because you're right. The people in our lives, he is pursuing.
Yeah.
And your taxi driver and your mechanic and the guy giving you a ride, they all play some role in it. And that's the people, this Scent 315 family. This is it. You play a part. Stay awake, stay alert, stay intentional, because there are Bruces out there that the Lord is pursuing, and you get to be a part of that.
Glory. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if any of those people know their role that they played in this story. We play a part in that story.
Yeah, for sure. Did you want to speak on that?
Well, I was just thinking about like the breaking down. Like I feel like the Lord is breaking down barriers. Like every time there's something that happens supernaturally, and then you go back to like your old ways and something again happens supernaturally. And I think that's the Lord like breaking down and drawing him, drawing you to him slowly. And I sometimes wonder like in those moments when those things happen, how come God doesn't just come super dramatically? And I'm just like, hey, I'm God. And so then you'd be like, I have no choice but to follow you. But I think that each of those scenarios in which the walls are being broken down, that God is also teaching us something, and there it's bringing us to a place where we can choose him ourselves as opposed to like the forceful.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I think is beautiful.
Right on. So then what happened?
So then, to your point, and I want the listeners to know too, like my life today, like I own a business, we're opening a 501c3, we're going to help people get off the streets. There's this other side, like you mentioned, there's this Bruce that is not this guy that I'm talking about right now. And I think that's a beauty, part of the beauty in the story. Actually, that's a major part of the beauty in the story is what God has done. But to the people that helped me, this is crazy. So there was Sean McGurr is his name, and he wound up discipling me, him and a guy named John Spencer, and both have passed away actually, and they were both younger than me. But both have passed away. But they had, once I got saved, they mentored me. Like I went down to their shop, I hung out. We had late night Bible studies. Like the word was alive, man. It was fire. And I even had some clients, like when I first got saved, I did a business to business account management, and it was all over the phone. And recently been saved. I'm bouncing around, but I just got saved. I couldn't stop reading my Bible. I'm at work. I'm on the clock. I'm supposed to be like calling my clients, and I'm just reading my Bible. And I couldn't stop. And the manager came by, the office manager came by, who went to Church of Christ, and he just let me be. He just let me be. He didn't say a word.
Wow.
And when I did pick up the phone to call, I got a hold of one of my clients. Her name was Sonia and Mark Ellis in New Jersey. And I forgot what she said, but she said one little thing about Jesus, and I started asking her questions. And she would spend like an hour on the phone with me, just discipling me, this lady in New Jersey. On the phone, like discipling this guy, a young kid in San Diego with lots of questions. And so there were several people that were, God just made available to answer my questions and be there for me.
So
and I feel
beautiful.
Like he has those people that are there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he has those people that are there.
You're looking at him.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. He has people. Shortly after I gave my life to Jesus and everything was going well, I think the devil realized he couldn't get me anymore, and so he went after that which was closest to me, which was my family. And this isn't like a whiny story. Like, my story is a story of like victory and reconciliation and restoration. So listeners, like, this isn't meant to be like a Debbie Downer kind of story. So he went after my wife, and my wife wound up leaving me for someone that was very close to me, and it devastated me. And because here I was, you know, hey God, I just got saved. Hey God, I'm following you. Hey God, everything's going right. Mm-hmm. But my perception of him was incorrect through that pain. And so I went to First Assembly of God. I sat in a prayer room for hours at a time, just waiting and waiting and waiting for something that never came, which was the reconciliation of my marriage. And that was a very difficult thing to walk through. And so I was actually hanging out with good friends, and then I started slowly hanging out with bad friends, right? Mm-hmm. Just little by little, inch by inch. And so I found myself again making bad choices, and I went from God blessing all the things in my life to basically running away from him and saying, hey, if you're real and you love me, why did you let this happen? And I think that's such a trap for Christians and for the world. Oh, right? Yeah, we know God is good, but it's like, why are you letting this happen? But our perception of him through pain is oftentimes skewed, I believe, because he's with us in the pain, isn't he? He's always with us in the pain. I will never leave you or forsake you. Like, he's always there. So through that journey, I wound up really far away from God, making very bad choices, doing bad drugs and hanging out with bad people and all the stuff. And I knew that I was, so I was wondering, like, hey, do I call myself a drug addict? Because I don't see myself that way. But step one is admitting you're powerless over drugs. Mm-hmm. And I was powerless over drugs. That's step one. Okay. So I'm like, okay, I guess I can refer to myself as an addict. But an addict, I think, recognizes that, especially when they're in deep, like, they're on a road to destruction. They just don't know how to stop. The brakes are off. And for me, every time that I would use, it just widened the hole that I was trying to fill. Mm-hmm. Just widened that hole. And it's like, I keep trying to fill it with this and that. And so I knew that I was committing a slow suicide. And I think a lot of times people that are living in that lifestyle or stuck in addiction or homelessness or whatever that may be, they resign themselves to, I'm not worthy to be saved. Look at the damage I've done. Like, how am I ever going to face my parents? How am I ever going to face my kids? How am I ever going to face my family? How am I going to get my license back? It's like, there's these massive obstacles, I think, that most people think about when they have moments of clarity. And so in a very short time frame, like within a year, I went from managing a company and doing well and yada till I had nothing, and my family had to cut me off because I was just making bad choices. And that was a hard place to be. And I had cried out to God at one point because I didn't fit in the drug world at all. Like, I didn't fit there because I knew Jesus. I didn't fit. I'm too soft. And I cried out to God. I was like, hey, if you're real, save me. And I got arrested. And then
I'll save you.
I was in jail. I laugh now. It was terrifying then.
Oh, yeah.
I was in jail a couple days, and I get out, and boom, I get popped again. And then I'm in jail a couple days. I get out, and I got arrested again, like three times in 1 month.
Dude, it sounds like he's knocking on the door. Behold, I'm knocking on the door.
And there was like, I was at the point of really wanting, like, I was in a really dark place, and I couldn't see a way out. I only knew of one way out. I didn't really want to go that way.
Yeah.
And so I cried out, and the last time I got arrested and I was in jail, and the judge told me, like, hey, man. Oh, the DA said, Pitts, you were here last week. You knew me. So I was like, okay. So the judge said, hey, do this probation thing or you're going away. And so at that time, God gave me a moment of clarity where I recognized a way out. And as soon as I knew I had a way out, man, okay, I took it. And I was through the McAllister Institute, wonderful program. And the first meeting orientation I go to, the devil shows up in lots of ways. He doesn't want you to get out of that lifestyle. So first day orientation, I look over, there's this woman, and she opens up her purse and she goes, hey, you want to get high?
At McAllister.
Yeah, and she had all the drugs in her purse. Oh my God. And I recognized right away, and I was like, you are the devil. No, I don't. And so I got clean, and through that process, I was able to process my pain and go through that. I didn't really touch on it a lot, but addiction is, I think, probably one of the most outward expressions of of our fallen nature. Like, it's just on the outside. You can see it on the outside. Everybody else has their brokenness. It doesn't really manifest in that way, but addiction manifests really well on the outside. Mm-hmm. And drug use is a symptom of something underneath.
Yeah.
There's this channel, I don't know if you ever watch it, it's called Soft White Underbelly.
Yeah.
You heard of that guy?
Yeah.
Okay, so I started watching him years ago, and everybody on there, drug addict, prostitute, whatever, mm-hmm. every one of them has trauma in their life that they never dealt with. And so I think most people are carrying around trauma. I think worst case trauma, or they're definitely buying into an identity outside of what God says they are, of yeah. who God says yeah. they are, yeah. buying into that identity.
I think that's universal. We've had so many people on the show that didn't, they had gender dysphoria. Do they call it that?
Yeah.
They didn't,
yeah.
okay. So they, and I remember one episode where a young lady that we were interviewing just said, people in this lifestyle are like everybody else. They're looking for love.
Yeah.
They're looking for something. And the old song, and all the wrong places. Thank you, Matthew, you picked that up. And so you're right. And you, just like you said, the way you said it about the hole getting bigger, we're trying to fill our emptiness
yeah.
with emptiness.
Yep.
We're trying to fit a puzzle piece.
Yeah. And it just can be so destructive. And once you've ignored the truth, all you got left is a lie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's where you're coming out of now.
Yes.
In this story.
Yeah, correct, yeah. There's so many ways I can drill down, so forgive me for bouncing all over the place. There's so many stories that I can drill down into that are just amazing, that show God's providence and love and care for me. One of them that's standing out right now is when I was still in my addiction, I really wanted to get out and I really wanted help. So I walked from Lakeside to La Mesa First Assembly
wow.
one day. And I'm distraught. I'm really feeling the weight of my choices, not seeing my kids for a little while, really jacking up my life and all that. So I go to church and I'm walking in the back alley behind the church. And it was so eerie because I'm there and people are walking by me that know me, that didn't even look at me, didn't even recognize me. And I felt invisible. And I don't know what.
Were they ignoring you?
No, I don't think they recognized me.
You were just unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think they recognized me. And it really, I laugh now, but I did like Noah. I went and I sat under a bush and I cried.
I bet.
But that was a very, very.
Was that like a wake up moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a wake up moment. You have those, I think people have those, and at least I did. I have them in my addiction. I had them in my using where I would just look around and see, wow, what is really going on.
People because, that recover have those.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, because I knew Jesus before going in. I knew Jesus. Yeah. And I had a couple of people on the street that were like, dude, what are you doing here? Yeah. Like two different people. I had a couple of people say, are you sure you want to be a part of my world? And I'm like, that's the devil. Mm. Really wild stuff. But
I think the difference between knowing Jesus and having Jesus in your life, and then there's activating Jesus in your life.
Yeah.
And I think what you're talking about is activating. You're finally activating Jesus in your life.
Yeah.
And that's where we all have to reach at some point. But I think those moments force you to take you to that point or not make that decision.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. And I was able to get clean, went through McAllister, processed my pain of the divorce and did all that. But I was still like 1 foot in the world, 1 foot out of the world. And today I'd say that I've been really following Jesus for probably 15, 16 years, like following him really hard and pressing in. And I've experienced so many like actual literal miracles and seen people heal, deliverances, and just lots of stories I could tell on that end. But as I was writing this morning, the season I'm in right now is I feel like God is, at my age, 51 years old, he's unwinding the last of the strongholds that I built my life on while simultaneously showing his presence to me. Because it's tough to be unwound. Mm. It's a tough thing to be unwound. And it's good. Like, I don't feel bad. Like, it's not, it's, when it's with Jesus, it's a good thing. It's just tough. So, like, I feel like he's, like, removing these last strongholds that I built my life on, these false identities. And he's showing me still, probably providentially, he's here, he's kind, he's loving, he speaks to me. I get lost in worship all the time. It's just amazing. His presence is always there during this kind of a painful process.
I think it's really cool sometimes to see yourself through someone else's eyes.
For sure.
Because you know how I feel about you, and you know what I see in you.
Yeah.
And you might not see that sometimes for yourself.
For sure.
You know what
100%.
I'm saying? Yeah. So when you're encouraging somebody, when you're saying,
no, this, you're way cool.
Yeah. Everybody says that to Brianna. She's used to it by now.
She is.
She gets it every 15
minutes. So talented.
Thank you.
So yeah. I just think that's something that's really special, and that it's not to be taken for granted. Those relationships where the stuff that you get to walk through with somebody else, and you get to encourage them and stand with them, that's a special privilege.
For sure. 100%. 100%. As I was, yeah, thank you for that. I think, so my belief is that we're all in each other's lives for a specific purpose, and we all have the lessons that we've learned through Jesus for a specific purpose, and it's to encourage and build one another up as a church. And I feel like there's such a gift in vulnerability within the church if it's done right.
Yeah.
Really. And I feel like a lot of people go to church, like my experience going to church first going in, let me backtrack if I can. I didn't know which religion was right. Okay, landed on Christianity. I go into Christianity and I'm like, which Christianity is
First Assembly?
So
that could have been the harder joke.
Yeah, man. So you're telling me. So I got saved in First Assembly, and they're like speaking in tongues, and I'm like, that's
different.
Yeah, it's different. I used to get goosebumps. Okay, I'm feeling something. And then my managers at the company were Church of Christ. So then I'm like, they talk me to go into Church of Christ. So I go to Church of Christ, and they don't sing with music. If you don't know that, there's no music. Mm-hmm. They just sing. But I still felt the Spirit, and still felt the presence of God. And it took me a long time to land on a church, but I think that's hard for Christians going in, man.
So Hills is just like that.
Yeah. <It's>. You don't know what church to go to. You don't know which denomination is right. And I would just say, people, man, like, just read your word for yourself, and God will reveal where He wants you to be.
Yeah. Bro, that's so good.
Yeah. And it's like, as long as most denominations aren't caught up on salvific issues. Mm-hmm. It's like little things that,
that was a good word,
may be different there. And so it's important to recognize that when Jesus is going to guide you, for sure. But back to vulnerability, I feel like people, they get saved and they go to church on Sunday and they're reading their Bible and they go to a home group and they're like, oh, this is Christianity. And then after a while, there's no power in that.
Yeah.
There can be. Like, worship is always good. But if you're not in, my personal feeling, if I wasn't in my word and I go to, and I'm not worshiping on my own, when I go to church on Sunday, it's like a one-off.
Yeah. Yeah. We're based on 1 Peter 3:15. The first thing that it says is sanctify Christ as Lord in your heart. And that is that's that secret life with God. That's what we do when nobody else is looking, and it's us. It's Him and us. Okay, so what do you want to leave the people that are listening to this right now?
Man, if I can touch on really quickly community, if I'm allowed to. Community, so people hang out with people that they like, and people tend to hang out with people that are like them, which can be double-edged sword. And I started going to All People's Church. That's where like Jesus really got a hold of my family, is All People's Church, right?
Yay.
Yeah.
So kind of give, okay, so like my wife and I got married. She didn't really know the Lord. I really started following the Lord hard when we got married. And I was really hoping to see some things in our family, but most of all was my wife to believe in Jesus. So like for 7 years, I'm praying, I'm journaling, we're having a hard marriage, long time. Mm-hmm. And We went to soccer practice with our son when he was 5 years old. We met this woman who's oozing Jesus. As soon as I met her, I'm like, this lady's a Christian, like a real one. Like, she loves the Lord, probably like you, Brianna.
Yes, oozing.
Oozing Jesus. Yeah. And she invites us to a barbecue. So we go to this barbecue, and it's like all these people that are on fire for Jesus, like on fire for Him. They walk with this expectation to see Him move every moment of every day. And so we jump into this body of believers, and it's amazing. So my wife, a short time later, like, I've been trying to get her to go to church for a long time. One time I come downstairs at 4 a.m. and she's reading her Bible.
No way.
And I freaking broke.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Broke. So then we got baptized. I baptized her. She baptized me.
Jesus.
She left through this ministry school. I was like, no way. I don't want to do ministry school. So wound up doing this ministry school. Called School of Transformation, little plug there.
This is
People's Church. Yeah.
Love that church.
Man, and I tell you, man, like, I met Jesus. Like, the Bible came to life, and it went from being this external thing and getting goosebumps sometimes to the supernatural things that people talk about that, you know, can be done well or can be done really wrong. And all people did it really well. and saw people healed. My wife, one of them, like physically healed right in front of my eyes. We prayed for a baby for years and years. And we got pregnant and then had a miscarriage. And my wife was having a hard time with that. We got pregnant again. We didn't want to know the gender of the baby. And I'm sitting in church one day at All People. She's 8 months pregnant. And I'm like, just quietly talking to the Lord. Lord, is it going to be a boy or a girl? Not paying at all the attention to the sermon. And out of the air conditioning, old building, by the way, flies a bright pink piece of confetti and lands on my wife's stomach.
No. With the name Lily on it?
No. Almost, yeah.
Oh, Lily's cool.
That'd stuff like that, man. I'm like, and she was, Lily was born like a year after the baby that we were going to have, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, did I say that right?
Yeah. 1 year later, the miscarriage, we have the baby almost on the exact date. Crazy. Wow. So God restores, man.
What a redemption.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going off and rambling a bit here, but in community, things will come out of you in community that can only come out of you in community.
Sure. Yeah.
And I went into the church. I come from a wonderful family, very loving mother, wonderful sisters. Like, my mom worked her tail off, wonderful person, but without a dad and not a Christian family. So going into a Christian community as a first-generation Christian, I don't know what, it's cool for me to see what a Christian family looks like. The Schwarms. Like, I love that family.
Yeah, I'm like,
well, look at, this is how it's
is
done.
Is that how Lily got her name? Because Lily Schwarm is a giant.
Yeah. I think it's important to the church, quote-unquote the church, the body of Christ, if a new believer comes into your congregation and they may not be like you, we have, I think, in my opinion, a responsibility and a duty to kind of welcome them in and say, hey, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
And it might be uncomfortable. And there may be people that you would not really regularly hang out with, but that's just what it looks like. And so All People's Church, like, they reparented us as a couple. And then, so community is important.
People who are different than you give you texture and flavor to your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If everybody is the same, that is boring.
Well, that's why I came to Foothills. That's why I stayed at Foothills, actually, because people like reached out to me, and when I came here, they were very nice. Yeah. And when I was a kid, I lived down the street from Foothills, and I would always see the Foothills bus. And I was told, actually, by people in my community, don't go to Foothills because there's no people of color there. They're an all white church. And there's nobody there that will be like you. And I was like, oh, okay. And crazy enough, I ended up going to Sunrise, but it's interesting because I feel like now, kind of like you were talking about, looking back on my life, like everything that I love is like at my church and my community.
Yeah.
Like my whole life is my church community. Mm-hmm. And some people might be like, oh, that's a lot. You never get out. Like, you're never away. Like, you're always in that sphere. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. That's what I want. I get out as far as going and loving others, but the community that I have at my church is my family.
Yeah.
I mean, we even do Star Wars together.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, we do.
Of course. Doing life together it's a bumper sticker, but it's for real. That's why it's a bumper sticker, because you really are walking through life together. And I don't want to just stay hyper on Foothills because we love it, okay? And it's messy. But we're like, for me, we're in our fourth generation at Foothills.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Like, we get the Ruth Hoffmans and the Alex Goodmans and the Al Green. Now I'm like the poor imitation of Al Green, but I'm the old guy. That's what I got in common. But then we've got our kids and our kids' kids. And it's just incredible to watch what God does at all of those different multi-generational things. It's just so good.
Doing it and doing it well.
Yeah. That's right.
And it's not just for Foothills. All Peoples, come on. That's an incredible church. And we've had pastors on from a ton of different churches where there's 100 people, where there's 10,000 people. And that God intends on taking us from orphans into family.
Amen.
You know?
Yes. Shout out Stephen Gulley at All People.
Yeah, you beat me to it.
Yeah.
I love that, man.
I was waiting for the moment.
Father, I just want to thank you for this conversation. It went by in a heartbeat. But Father, I just pray for the person right now who is listening and they go, oh, that's me. Or I have someone that I really love who's there. And Father, I just ask that this would be a message of hope, of absolutely unbridled encouragement to those that you have called into relationship with yourself to change the world. In Jesus' name.